Significant, the SICK podcast. Who and what drives us? Let's talk about it.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. Is deep learning the game changer in the industry? Thank you very much to everyone who's tuning in to our podcast here at SICK. My name is Patrick. I'm joined here at the table by Christoph Eichhorn. He's our product manager for deep learning, so the perfect person who can help us and mainly the listeners understand a bit more about the topic. So how are you doing?
Hi, Patrick. I'm doing fine. Thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure to be a guest.
Great. I also see that you brought a Swiss Army knife here.
Yeah, well, before joining this podcast, I've been asked to bring an item that I identify myself with, and it's a versatile tool that can serve many purposes. So you have a saw, you have a pair of scissors, some screwdrivers, and also a corkscrew, which can be convenient in some cases. And I'm not using a Swiss Army knife that often, or maybe sometimes when I do some outdoor activity or so. The main reason why I brought it is that it represents a mindset of people with a large set of interests, which is something that I like. To me, life is more interesting if you dedicate time to different things, especially when you're a curious person. And if you show interest for different things, you will gain different skills and knowledge in different domains that can be useful in different cases. And in many cases, I think that new things don't appear just because somebody invents something completely from scratch. I believe that new things often show up because somebody picks up a concept or a brilliant idea from one domain and transfers this concept to a complete different field and applies it in a very different way to generate something new. And I think this is a very important thing for us humans.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I use it a lot of the time for cutting cheese and salami. I think that's also a good use for it. But at the same time, you're right. It's like digitalization. I think that's a good bridge now. You're talking a lot of human skills as well, a lot of the intelligence of a human being. And then we're throwing out this deep learning as a term, which I think, at least when I think about it, it seems a bit cold at first because we talk about machine learning. There's topics about AI, obviously. Maybe we start out with a little bit of a definition of what deep learning is before we go deeper into the podcast for the listeners here.
Yeah, that's a good question, a good point to start with. What's the definition of deep learning? Maybe we start from artificial intelligence, which is basically everything where you have computers doing smart things, if you want to take it this way.
Right.
Artificial intelligence, to me, could also be some chess computer who has been programmed by a person and is smart enough to beat me.
It's like AlphaGo, right?
Yeah, that's again a step further because that was already machine learning, which was involved there because they trained AlphaGo on real data and it learned by itself how to beat human beings. But then within artificial intelligence, exactly, you have machine learning, which is a subset of it where you have computers learning by themselves how to deal with specific tasks. And again, within machine learning, we have deep learning, which actually is machine learning, but using artificial neural networks. The term deep comes into play because it's not just neural networks. It's so-called deep neural networks where you apply many hidden layers in the neural network. This is an important point because it makes the deep neural networks more able to deal also with very complex situations. But at the same time, this implies that a lot of computational resources are required to both execute the neural networks for decision-making processes, but also and especially to train them. That's actually the reason why deep learning came up only with that much intensity in the last years. It really kicked off 15 years ago that people really started doing things with deep learning, even though the technology had been known for decades before.
Well, very good. Thank you for that. I think that clears up a little bit about what deep learning is. Some people talk about how it's used in production and in automation and different sort of these maturity levels when it comes to, say, digitalization. Where would you say that deep learning fits into this? You know, we have a lot of sensor data, obviously, within SICK or sensor companies in general are collecting quite a lot of data. How would you say that deep learning is involved with increasing the digitalization level of automation and production using this type of data?
I'll take it one step earlier and start saying what is digitization. So basically digitization fundamentally means the conversion of physical or analog information into digital information that can then be further processed by computers, which is the basis of all of that. This is basically what any kind of sensor does. It converts some situation into some piece of digital data.
Sure.
What we've been doing traditionally was that this data was used for something immediately, be it some decision-making process in the quality control or steering some automation process. It's actually the key for automation to have some sensor data, some digital data.
Just to repeat a little bit, what you're saying obviously is digitalization is so wide that you're taking information. It could just be locally used if you're doing a packaging machine and you're detecting some products and you're wrapping them and things like this. These are the normal automated tasks. And digitalization even encompasses the simple things of detecting objects, measuring objects, and using that to make decisions on the machine itself.
Yeah, actually, that's the very first step. And if you go by the definition, that would already be digitization, that you create digital data. Yeah. For many years, we've been doing that at SICK very successfully. And the data has been used most of the time immediately for some very specific task. And actually, this is not what we talk about when we talk about digitization today. What we mean when we talk about digitization today is a broader concept. We create digital information not for just one single purpose, but for a more abstract means, which is making the data available on a very abstract level and use and reuse it in very different ways. So it can be used to connect pieces of information that enable us to understand complete processes on a higher level much better, like we are doing, for example, in overall equipment efficiency measurements.
Right.
It can be used to find any kind of issues or deviations from the normal, not just looking at one device, but looking at how different components of a process work together. It can help us to gain flexibility to readjust processes quicker and produce also customizable goods. And then it can help us to improve our supply chain management, for example, by measuring filling levels and reacting in time when something goes wrong. And
can I interrupt you there? Yeah. I think that's obviously very interesting because, if you're using it, you're saying that if you're using this data for just something more than just the old sort of description of digitalization, which would be within sort of the confines of the machine. A lot of that came from simply having PLCs and maybe a little bit of an interactive man-machine interface that you could press on. And now we're taking that data and it's more freely available. There are more of these APIs. There's more ways of getting to the data and then putting it together. And what you're saying is when you do use this data that's already there, there's a lot of other benefits that come about, such as looking at that end-to-end efficiency, we're calling it overall equipment efficiency.
That would be one example out of many. And that's what we're meaning when we talk about digitization, that we're actually collecting a lot of data from different sources, bringing it together. And then we end up having a lot of data.
Right.
And then you need to make sense out of that data. And that's, I guess, where artificial intelligence plays a very crucial role, that you have a lot of data and you want to, again, reduce it to some very meaningful pieces of information that can help you to take decisions on a better level or to steer your machines or to collect the domain knowledge to take better quality control decisions.
Right.
An example for that would be applications in the wood industry or in other industries with naturally grown products where we collect a lot of images, like gigabytes of images displaying different ways how these items can look like. Then we train an artificial neural network with that data and narrow the information down to just the size of such a really small neural network, which is maybe less than a megabyte in size, but which is able to take very accurate decisions based on the whole experience from this huge data set that we use to train the neural network, and where this knowledge is then condensed in this small artificial neural network, which is then able to take correct and accurate decisions based on that.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, thank you for kind of connecting this first question of promoting digitalization. I probably even didn't say it quite as well as I could have. I think going back and talking about digitalization as a total thing, how there's a very simple way of looking at it, and now as you're putting it, there's a lot of data out there suddenly that it's freely usable and the ways that you made a couple of very, very good examples of, taking this vision information and looking at wood and the wood grains, I guess, or the patterns on the wood, and taking this massive amount of data and instantaneously deciding, you know, what this is, or is this good or bad. I think that takes a lot of knowledge. I think now you're getting back to the Swiss knife again, because I think that jump that you did, it probably is like multiple things at once, multiple things that have to happen, right? Like, you just don't get that by snapping your fingers and saying, okay, magic, I have a neural network on my sensor.
I think it's a good idea to bring the Swiss Army knife back into play here, because actually, again, we have a tool here that allows us to do such a very complex application in one industry, like, for example, wood. But we can use the very same tool to also solve applications in complete different domains, which is, again, something that I find very fascinating, that you can train the neural network to identify different things in a wood industrial case, but you can use the same neural network to learn how to find some specific defects, or to do some assembly checks, or to sort other naturally grown products, doing quality control inspections in productions like solder joints and other things. That's something which is really fascinating about that technology, that it's so amazingly adaptive to many different applications and industries.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we're kind of sounding like nerds here, because there's so many different technical things or possibilities with this. Like, if you're saying that it's possible, you know, obviously with natural products that can be used for anything, like soldering joints and things like that, to make decisions very, very quickly and based on deep learning methods. If we wanted to take it from, you know, go into sort of some real world applications, what are customers requiring of us? I think that's probably quite interesting in the people listening to the podcast, is now that we know the technology side, what are some of those needs that customers have, maybe some of their pain points and difficulties as well?
The expectations that our customers usually have is that they want something which is an easy solution to their problems. So it's, if possible, they want something which comes along with not too much effort. They want a digital solution or deep learning solution to integrate smoothly in their existing setup. Our customers are very different. SIG is active in many different industries, and we have a very heterogeneous customer base. So the majority of our customers is very well aware that digitization is very important. And when it comes to execution, the levels of what has already been done and reached can be very different. Mm-hmm. Some of the customers have already invested a lot of efforts and are in touch with us just to fill some minor gaps, which they still see. And others are maybe starting more from scratch and are still having some issues with some general terms and need support with understanding maybe what a deep neural network is and how easy it is to use and things like that.
That sounds like me as well, as I want. If there's a new solution, it can sound technical, it can sound complicated, and I do get a little bit excited when a little bit of the technology is there, but at the end of the day, there's almost so much time that I have, and I do want something that's quite easy to implement. What types of added value would you say? I mean, a lot of customers, a lot of people in general are perfectly okay with what's happening today, more or less. I mean, the machines are running, production is happening. Actually, things are not so bad necessarily. Hmm. So what would be the advantage to using it, or what are some of the values that customers see? Hmm. And are you able to deliver that value and still make it simple and easy, like the Swiss Army knife? Hmm. Maybe do the first one first. What types of values would you say, or value that a customer would get out of using it?
So the very first thing that needs to be done is to actually clarify what are the needs, what are the possible benefits for a customer, identify this together with the customer. It sounds like a very trivial task, but it's not always that clear. And what I like to say is that you can only get what you want if you know what you want. So that's the very first point to start with. Mm-hmm. So at the beginning, we usually have conversation with customers, figuring out what exactly the application is about and how the potentials for improvements are. Yeah, and then we can look into that and look into the solution baskets, bring into application what best fits these specific requirements.
Right. Well, I mean, if we're talking about, I understand what you're saying with the looking at the requirements and things like that, but I've got to go back to maybe we had a previous conversation. I think it was last year or the year before even, where we're looking at the soldering joints of a circuit board. And if I imagine somebody, you know, a worker working there for 6 to 8 hours, you know, looking at this and trying to figure out, is this okay and not okay? You know, it's a very maybe human thing. And we're going from the topic of humanity and AI, but it's a very human thing to sort of help this person out or help these manufacturers out with the difficult job of seeing those differences. And so I guess maybe there's, at least from my point of view, those two values of one, removing kind of tedious work. Mm-hmm. And then the other side is you can't catch everything, right? Mm-hmm. And some of those neural networks, at least that I saw being implemented, can detect things that even the eye or even someone who's very experienced at it can detect, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. And you just named one of the key benefits of applying AI to different problems. It allows us to automate tasks, especially tedious tasks, that were difficult or even impossible to automate in the past. So we really open the door to new possibilities to drive automation a few steps further, thanks to deep learning, thanks to artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. This benefit alone is quite huge. Being able to automate things has always been good. When we talk about deep learning, we can combine this huge advantage with a second, maybe even bigger advantage, which is the way how deep learning is used in the solution development. Because here we are talking about a paradigm shift that is occurring. When we are using deep learning to solve an application, we are no longer providing a set of rules to define how decisions are to be made. What we do with deep learning is to provide examples, significant examples, to teach or to enable the neural network to train itself how to distinguish different things and how to take accurate decisions, which means that since we are not programming a solution anymore, but training it, it makes the whole process much easier because instead of having to understand exactly how to take decisions, we just need to show good examples in the same way as we would instruct a human person to take the decisions. We show the same examples, maybe a few more examples, but basically the same examples to an algorithm, which will figure out on its own how to take these decisions.
It's pretty fascinating, actually, because I remember kind of quality control even years ago, you had things like, well, it shouldn't be more than 3 millimeters high and 2 millimeters wide, you know, and then that would be maybe some measurement that was going on. But what you're saying is you are simply using good and bad examples of pictures, for example, and it automatically, kind of like magic, with the help of deep learning, can solve it using this decision-making in the neural network, right?
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
True. And so actually, you can also apply it to tasks that you were able to solve in the past. And because just speeding up the development process can already be a big value. But I think especially in those areas where it was difficult to automate the tasks in the past, now we really are able to combine the benefit of being able to do that and also being able to have the solution being trained not by a data scientist or a machine vision expert or some consulting person from our side, but by the customer themselves who know best what to look for when choosing and picking the right training examples. I think this is also a very crucial point. We are able, with the deep learning tools that we've created, to put the technology in the hands of those persons who know the needs best, who are really the experts for the problem that they want to solve, who are working on a daily basis with the application that they want to solve, who can really precisely tell what to look for and what not, and thus be the perfect persons to really train a neural network in order to execute a very specific and individual task.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that makes sense to me. What challenges do you see coming up into the future that we need to maybe overcome? Like, it's a great tool, but are there aspects there that have to be watched out for? I know that some people, sometimes are worrying about what an AI is going to be doing into the future. You know, as a marketing guy, maybe ChatGPT takes over a lot of the work that I have to do and things like that. So what do you see in the future as a challenge?
Yeah, well, I think there are quite a few. And you mentioned a few questions that people are asking themselves in general about artificial intelligence and where this can end up. There are some very major concerns in the world, like when will artificial intelligence outperform humans on a general level, which is called artificial general intelligence. I think all experts agree that this has not yet been reached. This concern comes in combination also with the question, will artificial intelligence take the power and rule the world and rule the humans, which is something that we would like to avoid, of course. And a second very big concern when looking at AI as decision-making processes in weapons, which is something really scary. So that's, I think this is also a major concern that many people have. And a third aspect that is widely discussed is the question that you mentioned, will it take the jobs away from us? Because AI will outperform us and do the work that we do today, which I think is a valid concern for many of us, because AI can handle information in a very good way. To us at SIG, I think the two first points that I mentioned are probably, they are of course relevant, but we are not directly confronted with these aspects. But the third aspect, I think, is quite a valid point to us. When we enable a sensor to do a quality control, for example, in a very accurate, reliable way with the human way of taking decisions, mm-hmm. we basically automate a process that required a human in the past. Mm. I think that in most cases, this can be tedious tasks, as you mentioned, but maybe in some cases, it will also be interesting tasks. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I think that this is what sensors and automation have been about all the time during the last years. So we've been always working on making our productions more efficient, on being more productive by automating things. And I see that what we are doing here brings that to a new level, allows us to automate tasks that were difficult to automate in the past. And at the same time, I'm not too much concerned that this will actually make us all lose our jobs and avoid people having work. Because basically, we've been doing this for the last 20 years already. And as far as I know, currently there are less people who are unemployed than ever before. So it doesn't seem to correlate anyhow. But what I believe is that people are doing more interesting jobs today because they don't have to do the tedious things, as you already said.
Yeah, these are also macroscopic discussions about training and or education and things like that. And I've seen other examples where you're talking about an automated grocery store where, okay, there's no checkout people. Perhaps if they're students, they would have wanted that job of being a checkout person. But you also have a need for advising people on wine or cheese or things like that. So like different types of jobs I can imagine coming up from that. If we look into this crystal ball even further, into 20 years into the future, what could you imagine coming up? Maybe give us a little view on this if you could.
One goal will still be to free humans from tedious tasks, as we already mentioned.
Right.
This can be done in different directions. So we already talked quality control. I think also in robot guidance, deep learning will play a crucial role to make the eyes of robots more accurate and enable robots to take on tasks that are difficult today, like picking stuff.
Right.
We also see different developments also at SIG that the training of neural networks or the training of models that are using neural networks usually requires a lot of computational effort, but at the same time we are able to bring this also closer to the device to enable our sensors themselves to train some tasks on device and thus be more efficient and quicker in the solution development while still having the more computationally powerful resources in the back to do some difficult tasks as well. Mm-hmm. So we're also investing there to prepare better to deal with large amounts of data and to build up really good domain expertise in a very efficient way.
Does this mean, just interrupting for a second, so you're saying to learn on the fly, right? To be able to have like in the operations when the normal running of the machine, it sort of learns what it should be detecting and whatnot. Is that possible? Because in the beginning we talked about the neural network being trained beforehand and working. So is this what you mean, or did you mean something
else? There are ways to do that. What I meant actually is that that we are shrinking down the footprint of the technology that we are applying in a way that some tasks now today can be trained on the device itself and not on a powerful server as we
far. Yeah,
so this is one aspect. And what you meant, the self-training, I think it's still important that we have, that we provide some guidance, that some application experts have a look at the data and help the sensors to take the right decisions. Because it's not always easy, even if you get a bunch of good and bad samples from somebody. Hmm. If you have a look at it, but you have absolutely no context of the application, even as somebody who's familiar with deep learning, sometimes you say, what's the difference? What's the point? What do we have to look at? So I think it's always important to also bring in the expert here. But we can support these processes heavily with artificial intelligence to make the development process and the training effort less in the future, even less than today.
That's very good. So, I mean, in the end, it's... I think one can't exist without another. Probably looking into the future, we have the deep learning, and in order to make it really work in the right direction, you do need the human touch, the experts being there to help out as well. And so I think we never really get away from the human and machine working in tandem together, sort of towards a better future, I would say. I think that we're at the end of the podcast. I really appreciate you taking the time, Christoph, with your Swiss Army knife and everything to be here today. And I really want to have a thank you then to the people who are listening into this podcast. Please subscribe to our podcast. We have many exciting podcasts coming up as well. So stay tuned and see you soon, Christoph.
Thank you, Patrick, for having me here.